Wilson to Raleigh, North Carolina, to push for health care, immigrant rights, and voting access. Stay with us.
Una canción de amor esta noche. Es lo que yo te quiero entregar. Para que solo tú la retoces. Para romperla luego de amar. Una canción de amor esta noche, inesperada para mi voz. Una canción de amor y de goce. Una canción de amor de los dos. Una canción chorubiada. Una canción chorubiada.
Una canción, a song by the Cuban singer Silvio Rodriguez, performing at New York Central Park years ago. In our next segment, we'll be speaking to the Cuban ambassador to the United Nations. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to North Carolina, where Bishop William Barber and other faith leaders are on a 50-mile march from Wilson to Raleigh to push for health care for all, immigrant rights, and voting access. The march began Wednesday at the St. Jerome's Church in Wilson, North Carolina. This is the church's pastor, Reverend Della Owens Barber.
My brothers and sisters, we are here today when the North Carolina General Assembly received an order to engage in mid-cycle racist redistricting in an effort to abridge voting rights. But oh no, we are gonna march. And we decided we're gonna march, we're gonna walk, we're gonna drive, we're gonna caravan for 3 days to love forward together. And to mobilize voters to the poll, going from county to county, precinct to precinct. We will march until the walls of ICE raids come down. Yes. We will march until the walls of poverty fall down. Yes. We will march until the walls of religious nationalism fall down. We will march until the walls of environmental degradation fall down.
The Reverend Della Owens Barber, the wife of Bishop William Barber. Bishop William Barber also spoke in Wilson, North Carolina, Wednesday.
It's time for those who love truth-telling to turn it up and turn it on. It's time for those who love education and health care, who love a society where you don't have to be worried about people in our name claiming to be officers of the law shooting our people down in the street. It's time for love to turn it up and to turn it on.
Yes.
Am I right about it?
Yes.
We're joined now by Reverend Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove of Repairers of the Breach. He's joining us from the march in Knightdale, North Carolina. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Reverend Wilson Hartgrove. Explain why you're there.
Thank you, Amy. It's good to be with you. I'm here in Knightdale. This is day three of this march from Wilson to Raleigh. We're here to love forward together, we're saying, and we've got ministers of various denominations here, our brother Buddhist monk here with us, many people of many faiths and of no particular faith, but who know that love is the power that can overcome fear in this moment. And so we're marching to defy the attempt to steal a House seat here and to say we're going to love forward towards the things that we know and love for this place.
And Reverend, there is an effort in North Carolina to challenge a lawsuit challenging the redistricting effort. Could you explain to people who are not in your state what you most object to about the way that this gerrymandering has occurred?
Well, I was glad to hear Ari Berman explaining one of the ways that the current regime is trying to subvert the upcoming election, but they may not need Maduro's help if they can get help from folks here in North Carolina. So Donald Trump called the North Carolina legislature and said, find me an extra House seat. And the folks in charge of the legislature here said they would be glad to do that. And so they drew a gerrymander that took the places that we've been walking through for the last few days out of District 1 and put them in District 3 because they think, based on their calculations, that they can do that and steal District 1 from the people who elected their representative there. The reality, though, is that you can only do this by borrowing from places that you think are safe. Mm-hmm. And we believe that the most powerful pushback mm-hmm. against this robbery is for voters to show up.
Yes.
So early voting here started yesterday in our primary, and we've been walking and talking to folks about what they love and what they want for their state, and letting everybody know that we have the power of love, to show up and to not only keep the power we have, but maybe even expand power, because the danger of a gerrymander, the political scientists say, is that it can become a dummy-mander. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that there's going to be one big dummy-mander here in North Carolina.
That's right.
And repairs of the breach in your movement have also called for welcoming immigrants, not ICE. Could you talk about your concerns about the raids occurring around the country under the direction of President Trump?
Well, the abuse of power that begins with voter suppression and election subversion then gets used to support policies that bring violence to our communities. And we know that the one big bill that passed Congress last year, the big, ugly, deadly, and destructive bill that gave so much money to ICE to empower them to do what they're doing now, that same bill took money away from people right here, people who need health care, people who need nutrition assistance. That's what is at stake in the midterm elections. This isn't about left versus right or Democrats versus Republicans. This is about whether we're going to stand up and love the people and the places that we know.
Yes.
And so
yes,
all of these policies matter, and voting matters, because they wouldn't be trying to steal an election if it didn't matter. So we're out here encouraging everybody in North Carolina to show up and to reclaim our power to love forward together.
And what are your plans on Valentine's Day when you arrive in Raleigh in North Carolina, Reverend Jonathan
Wilson-Harbor? Well, we got a bunch of people out here today. We're going to be walking from here all the way into Raleigh. We'll get to the old Capitol by the end of the march today, and early tomorrow morning, folks are going to gather at Shaw University, and we're going to march right up Fayetteville Street. We're going to fill it up with people who want to love forward together, and we'll have a rally there. We're going to have lots of people sharing about why they've made the walk, about why we're committed to reach out to low-income and infrequent voters in North Carolina. We've got some special gifts that have been sent from friends around the country, a song from Brother Willie Nelson and other things. We're going to have a big celebration of this agenda of loving forward together as a way of launching and beginning an effort for the months ahead to turn out the largest midterm vote in North Carolina history.
Thank you for being with us, Reverend Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove, Assistant Director and Lecturer, the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School. All the best to Bishop Barber. Coming up, a humanitarian crisis is growing in Cuba as the U.S. blocks all oil shipments to the island as part of an attempt to topple the Cuban government. We'll speak to Cuba's ambassador to the United Nations. Stay with us.
Una canción de amor no es difícil.
cuando se viene de maldecir. Los dos idiomas viven felices y hacen familia para vivir. Una canción de amor que se mueve fuera del odio, el miedo, el quizás. Será de amor por si tú me quieres. Será canción por si tú te vas.
Una canción, a song by the Cuban singer Silvio Rodriguez, performing at New York Central Park years ago. He just finished a Latin American tour and is back in Cuba. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Cuba's facing a growing humanitarian crisis due to a U.S.-imposed oil blockade. Cuba's government announced Monday it's running out of fuel for commercial aviation, prompting Air Canada to cancel flights to and from the island. The Trump administration's threatened new tariffs against any nation that sends fuel to Cuba, which has been under a U.S. economic embargo since 1962, more than half a century ago. In recent years, Venezuela had been a key supplier of oil for Cuba, but that supply was cut off in early January after U.S. forces attacked Venezuela and abducted Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife. The Trump administration's Cuba policy is being led by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who has long called for regime change in Cuba, where his parents were born. Fuel shortages in Cuba have prompted major blackouts, while the cost of food and transportation has skyrocketed. In recent weeks, top UN officials have repeatedly warned about the impact of the U.S. oil blockade.
The Secretary General is extremely concerned about the humanitarian situation in Cuba, which will worsen, if not collapse, if its oil needs go unmet. He notes that for more than three decades, the General Assembly has consistently called for an end to the embargo imposed by the United States on Cuba. The Secretary General urges all parties to pursue dialogue and respect for international law.
In January, Mexico also stopped sending fuel to Cuba, but Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum has openly criticized the U.S. oil blockade against Cuba, describing the policy as, quote, very unfair. Earlier this week, Mexico sent two ships carrying humanitarian aid to Cuba. This is President Sheinbaum speaking earlier this week.
This sanction being imposed on countries that sell oil to Cuba is very unjust, very unfair. It's not right because sanctions that affect the people are not right. You can agree or disagree with Cuba's government, but the people should never be affected.
On Thursday, residents of Havana gathered as Mexican ships unloaded white pallets of humanitarian aid. This is Pavel Martinez.
The country is going through a very complicated situation. With the United States blocking fuel, practically the entire economy stops. I think Mexico is doing a good deed for us, regardless of the commercial contract that exists, as the president of Mexico has said. The friendship that has always existed between Cuba, Mexico, and several other countries in the area, Cuba has also provided help in other ways. I think now it's our turn to receive help because of the situation the United States has put us in.
We're joined right now by Cuba's ambassador to the United Nations, Ernesto Soberón Guzmán. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm glad Democracy Now! Falls in the 25-mile zone around Columbus Circle, where you're allowed to travel. Can you explain why you are so limited?
Well, first of all, Amy, thank you very much for having us this opportunity to participate in your show. And by the way, lovely son of Silvio Rodriguez, the son of love. So it's what we need right now. Well, as you said, yes, we have a restriction of movement here at the in New York. The member of our staff, we only have 25 miles around Columbus Circle to move. So, which is a measure just that affect Cuban mission and some other few missions. The rest of the diplomats accredited in New York, they have a free movement, not only in New York, but all over around the U.S. And that's part of the policy of aggression of the U.S. government against Cuba, because there is no other reason that you limited the movement of the diplomat accredited to the U.N.
I want to ask you about the Trump administration's fuel blockade on Cuba that has pushed the island to the brink of humanitarian collapse. That's what the United Nations has warned, as the Cuban people face more frequent power outages, shortages of basic necessities, skyrocketing costs of food, transportation. And your government, Cuba's government, announced Monday it's run out of fuel for commercial aviation. So you've got Air Canada saying they won't fly in or out. Why don't you describe right now the conditions on the ground?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that the word collapse, betrayed, give up are not in our dictionary. You know, even when we face a situation like this, which is a very, very complex situation, the words that are in our dictionary are resistance, resilience, find solution for our problem, you know, because this is not the first time that we face a situation like this. The point is that, first of all, the question is, it is right, not only unfair, but it is legal that a third country tell other countries that they can do or they cannot do something? Do the U.S. government has the right to say something like this? Is that a violation of the international law? Is that a violation of the rules of the foreign trade? Is that a violation of the charter of the U.N.? Yes. It is. So the situation is very complicated because, as you can imagine, it has a huge impact, not only from the humanitarian point of view, because, of course, for the hospital, you need electricity. For the education system, you need electricity. For production, for food production, you need electricity. If you produce foods, you need to transport food from one point to other point, and you need also fuel. If you need for our research, scientific research, you need electricity also. So what they are doing is trying to create as much problem as possible, and it is not a new strategy. It comes since 1960, when the Under Secretary of State at that time, Lester Mallory, said that the only way to defeat the Cuban government is to create economic problems, is to create a situation that a social and humanitarian situation so worse that the Cuban people cannot resist something like this. But the history showed that we have been resisting for the last 67 years, and we are ready to continue to finding solution for our problem. But and the point is, why does the U.S. government need to do something like this against a small country like Cuba? Because the pretext to sign the executive order on January 29 was that Cuba posed a threat to the U.S. National security. So how is possible that someone can believe that small country like Cuba suppose or pose a threat to the U.S. national security?
Ambassador, I wanted to ask you, most Americans are not aware that the entire blockade of the last 60 years is universally condemned by practically every nation in the world, except for the United States and Israel at the United Nations. It's been condemned every single year, yet it continues. If you could talk about this flagrant, because our media never says this is an illegal blockade of the United States against Cuba. If you could talk about that.
Of course. Good morning, Mr. Juan. As you said, for the last 33 years, the UN General Assembly has voted in a resolution against the embargo of the U.S. to Cuba. You know, with the overwhelming support of the international community that are saying the U.S. government for the last 33 years, you have to leave the embargo. But it is not only the embargo. This is an economic war, you know, because it is the embargo. But it is also to include Cuba in the list of a state of a sponsor of terrorism. You know, former President Biden, 6 days before to leave the White House, he removed Cuba from the list of a sponsor of terrorism based on reports made by U.S. Agencies that said that Cuba is not linking with the supporting of terrorism, you know. But a week later, President Trump include Cuba again in the list without taking in account the report made by the U.S. Agencies. But what does it mean that Cuba is included in the list of sponsor of terrorism? One single example. U.S. government has canceled around or more than 300,000 ESTA visas, electronic visas, for European citizens just because they visited Cuba as a tourist. So that means that countries like Dominican Republic or Mexico, where they receive a lot of Europeans tourists also, they have to recover the number of tourists that they received before COVID. And Cuba didn't. Why? Because measures like this. So the question is, why does the U.S. government wants that Europeans tourists don't visit Cuba? But second question, why the U.S. government don't allow the U.S. citizens to visit Cuba as a tourist? Because when we have this moment of engagement policy during the President Obama, Americans, Cuba became the first overworld destination for the Americans tourists, especially those ones that travel with cruise companies based on Florida. And every time that they return to the U.S., they said it was not so worse like you told me before, because they found a country with problems, of course, like everywhere, but they found also a problem with friendly people, with delicious food, with amazing culture, so with a safe country. So it was a place where they enjoy when they visited. So we have the embargo, we have the list of sponsors of terrorism, and also now we have the executive order of January 29 trying to blockade the supply of oil to Cuba. So they are, but also we have a campaign against medical cooperation that Cuba offered to some countries all over around the world. Cuba is famous because our health system, our health personnel, so, and they are saying that third countries, they cannot establish cooperation with Cuba in the health sector because it's another source of incomes of Cuba. The question is, once the Cuban doctors and nurses are going back to Cuba, they are going to send U.S. doctors and nurses to attend people in the third countries? This is something that you have to ask the U.S. government.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you, Ambassador, about the international solidarity. We reported on this Mexican humanitarian aid. Today in Moscow, Dmitry Peskov, the Russian presidential spokesman, said that Russia is evaluating options to assist Cuba. And quoting Peskov, he said, "During all these days, we've been in contact with our Cuban friends and have been discussing options to help them, possibly sending oil to Cuba." Your sense of what kind of solidarity you've been receiving around the world?
As you mentioned, we have received an overwhelming solidarity. Not only our gratitude forever and ever to Russia, to Mexico, and to the rest of the countries that have pronounced against this measure, but also, if you take a look of what is happening in the UN, you will see that we have an overwhelming support. the G77 and China, the largest group in the UN, they made a statement denouncing these new measures implemented by the U.S. government. The non-aligned movement, they also made a statement. The G77, it's 134 countries. Non-aligned movement, 124 countries. They also made a statement denouncing this situation. As we could see, the spokesperson of the Secretary General also denounced about the situation. Today in the morning, the spokesperson of the Human Rights Commissioner of the UN also denounced the measure and said that it was a violation of the human rights of the Cuban people. Yesterday, a group of independent experts of the UN Human Rights Office, they also published a press release denouncing the situation. The group of friends in defense of the charter of the UN and the rest of the countries that you already mentioned. So everybody understand that this is a massive violation of the human rights. This is a massive violation of international law, and something have to change.
Ambassador, I want to ask you quickly about the Trump administration's attack on Cuba's medical program. For decades, Cuba has sent doctors around the world to assist in health crises, including the COVID-19 pandemic. Amidst U.S. pressure, Guatemala has announced it'll be phasing out the use of Cuban doctors, a move that's likely to disproportionately impact indigenous peoples living in poverty. Last year, Secretary of State Marco Rubio announced visa restrictions for current and former Cuban officials involved in the medical missions, as well as foreign government officials who are linked to the program. Paraguay, the Bahamas, Guyana have also ended or altered similar agreements. If you could comment quickly on that, and then overall talk about whether you feel the attack on Maduro and his abduction brought not far from here, I don't know if it's within the 25-mile zone, to the Brooklyn Detention Center, is ultimately about the United States trying to take down your country, trying to take down Cuba, led by the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
Okay. First of all, about the cooperation, the health cooperation. As I said, unfortunately, the Secretary of State and the government of the U.S. have started a campaign against the Cuban cooperation, and they are not thinking about those people that have been receiving the health cares from the Cuban doctors and nurses. So this is the first point. The second point is that Cuba, those are programs of cooperation that were established between Cuba and third countries because both parts decided to do it. So and we will remain there until both parts agree that they need our service. Once someone think or decide that it doesn't need anymore.
We have 30
professionals.
Seconds.
Okay. And regarding the Venezuela issue, what happened in Venezuela is a violation of international law. Forget it about Cuba. Forget it about. They do something against that no one's supposed to do. You know, they attack a sovereign state, an independent state, and they kidnap a president that was elected in this country.
Are high-level talks taking place between the U.S. and Cuba and Mexico?
No. Our president said that there are no high-level talks. But he also said that we are ready to have it based on equal footing, respect on sovereignty, and respect on independence.
Ernesto Soberón Guzmán, Cuba's ambassador to the United Nations, thank you so much for joining us. We'll do an interview in Spanish and post it online. That does it for our show. February 23rd is Democracy Now!'s 30th anniversary at Riverside Church. Wynton Marsalis, Michael Stipe, Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, and many others will be there. Go to democracynow.org to get tickets. They are running out fast. Happy birthday to Brendan Allen. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Thank you. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Radio. It's Burnaby.
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI. Technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.